Those who can, do. Those who cannot, do it on the internet. FancyPantsGangsters.com. To the voice behind the show for actors who are heard but not seen, and we've kind of hit this rhythm here. A couple weeks ago, we had Phil Hendry, a voice acting legend. Last week, we had Daniel McRae, an up and comer, and now we're alternating back. We're back to the legend status. This week, I'm talking with the great Bob Bergen. I'm very excited about this.
Is that where I talk?
You can talk.
Oh, good. Hey,
please,
what's going
do
on? Hey.
We talked about this a little bit on the Facebook page and all of that, but your career has been filled with so many different roles that we're going to try to respect your time and get you out of here in a reasonable amount of time.
Okay, dope.
But I wanted to talk about a couple things. You've been in the business since the mid-80s.
Since the early 80s.
Early 80s, okay.
The
Wikipedia lists you at 85. Was there some roles
before that? My first job was in 1982.
Ah, what was that?
That was Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends.
Wow. So were you said Spider-Man, or were you somebody
I
else?
I was not Spider-Man. I did a few of them, but the first one, I was a stranded teenage alien who needed Earth's atmosphere made him sick, and Spider-Man had to get him back to his home planet, as far as I remember.
If you were doing this in the early 80s, you would have been still a teenager by that point.
I got my first job at 18, week out of high school.
Wow.
Yeah.
Was that the goal in high school? Like, were you pursuing acting, or did you just kind of fall into it?
No, I wanted to be the voice of Porky Pig when I was 5 years old. So I started studying voiceover when I was 14. So this was very well strategically planned.
It's all coming together, finally.
There you go.
We'll just jump right into Porky Pig here, because that is probably your biggest role in terms of mainstream nowadays people know you, because you actually took over. You've been doing Porky Pig since, you know, probably early 90s, I want to say. Right? You took over for Mel Blanc.
It was March 8th, 1990 was the first job I did as Porky, and that was for Tiny Toon Adventures.
Like I said, you took over for Mel Blanc. I mean, the guy that had been doing all these characters for over 50 years. Was that intimidating for you to take up this mantle of one of, you know, the big characters in animation?
Sure. Absolutely. And it still is, because, you know, I'll be the first to admit, at least for myself, I don't think I come close to Mel Blanc's genius. My goal is always just to keep the integrity of the character. But, you know, there will never be another Mel Blanc, you know, just like there will never be another Jim Henson. You know, some of these people, the characters go on, but the heart and the soul of who they were and who their characters are irreplaceable.
Do you find it difficult to kind of put your own stamp on these characters, given the history?
I used to. I remember when we first started doing the character for, you know, commercials and shorts, they would play me a good 15, 20 minutes of references of Mel, and I would do a line, and they would compare me to him, and I don't come close to sounding like him. Plus, his voices were sped up electronically, so when they hear mine compared to his, you know, his that were recorded, you know, the character evolved from the 30s to the 40s to the 50s, and, you know, just to compare really wasn't fair to me, and it wasn't fair to him, but that's what they did. And after a while, they stopped doing that side-by-side comparison and realized, well, this is who we're going to be working with, for at least for now, for the time being. So it's a little bit easier now. I don't have to worry about trying to sound so, I mean, I've been doing Porky now for 22 years. I don't have to sound as much as I can like classic Porky, but, you know, the difficult thing I'd say today is, like, for the Looney Tunes show, they're putting these characters in situations. I mean, you know, Porky Pig never had a cell phone before. Porky Pig is living in today's society, where the classic cartoons were from, you know, the 30s and the 50s. So putting him in situations that Mel Blanc never did as the character, I don't have anything to refer to see how he would have done it. So I have the opportunity as myself to create how I think Porky would react to certain things in today's world.
The comparison with Mel Blanc, which is apparently live as you were doing it, that sounds like the worst first date ever.
Kind of. You know, the problem was, and I called them on this, was they had this 10, 15 minutes of references, but they were all from different eras. And I'm like, well, do you want me to sound like Mel from 38 or 42 or 56? And I, because I knew so much about the character, I said, let's settle on the 53 to 56 era. That's the Duck Dodgers era. That's the Drip Along Daffy era. That's the era that I think Mel really completed the character, really owned the character. So that's kind of where I try to keep my interpretation of the character.
Now, were you doing, like, what was the first Porky Pig? Was it commercials for you?
No, the first thing I did was Tiny Toon Adventures.
Tiny Toon Adventures, that's right, you did say that.
Yeah.
Now, that was an interesting show just from a voice perspective, too, because while you're kind of handing off, you know, generationally these characters to the younger versions, at the same time, you are being handed off to taking over these characters. What was there anything else about Tiny Toons that, like, what was the atmosphere like of doing Tiny Toons?
You know, like any show, but we knew that it was something that was a gamble. It was the first project that they used the classic characters after Mel Blanc passed away. It was the next generation of characters from Warner Brothers, which is, I think that's one of the reasons why they had Bugs and Daffy, et cetera, in the first few seasons. If the Tiny Toon characters didn't click with the audience, they had the classic Looney Tunes to fall back on. Fortunately for that franchise, these writers who did Tiny Toons and the producers were brilliant and were able to take the classic feel but put a contemporary original thumbprint on these characters. So they didn't actually need the classic Looney Tunes just to hold their own. The Tiny Toon characters were fantastic.
I could talk about Looney Tunes all day, but there's more we got to cover here. Like you said, you've been a very busy man, and you continue to be busy. I mean, you'd think the man that does Porky Pig, like, he could just write his own ticket at that point. He never has to do anything else again.
Well, it doesn't quite work that way. Every day of my life, I have auditions, and you know, just because you have a high-profile character doesn't mean you're not a day-to-day actor who's looking for his next job. So I'd say, you know, with a few exceptions, you know, I don't know where my next job is going to be. You know, right now we're finishing up recording season two of the Looney Tunes show. I've got a few more months of that, and I know I've got some regular gigs that I have every month just because I'm a contract voice, but for the most part, you know, you're, no matter where you are in your career, you're always looking for that next job.
You've done a little bit of live action stuff. I see you were credited for the Gremlins.
That wasn't live action. That was voice. I did the voices of the characters.
Yeah. I mean, it was a live action movie, I guess.
Right. Yeah, I've done a lot of, you know, voice work on films. I do a lot of specialty stuff. You know, I do a lot of horror pictures and just add vocal effects here and there to films. I did the Santa Claus movies, playing Comet the Reindeer. Yeah, you know, when you're a voice person and you're a character voice person, there's no limit to what you can do. And that's what's fun about it. You know, some days you're doing a commercial for toilet paper, and the next day, I mean, I did the voice of a roll of toilet paper last year for a film. So you never know what you're going
to
do.
People that kind of follow voice actors and things like that, they tend to think of, like, there's a couple kind of creature people there, you know, like Frank Welker, Fred Tatasciore, D. Bradley Baker. Do you like doing the creature stuff? You've done some of the creature stuff. You mentioned Santa Claus, and I also think something like Spirited Away, where you were No Face, where it's, again, not quite a creature, but it's very kind of non-vocal or non-words, I guess.
Yeah, well, certainly a character, a few words, but yeah, I love playing the flying insects or the animals or the alien sort of things. I dig that stuff.
Do you feel that kind of changes how you approach a character when you can't rely on the writing?
Well, that's a good question. You have to, you know, you still have to emote. You still have to act. So I can remember doing scenes from Santa Claus 2 where they wanted the reindeer to be excited or they wanted the reindeer to be kind of sad. So without speaking English and staying in character voice, you have to have emotions. And this is where the acting comes in. You know, there are a lot of people out there that can do fun sounds, but it takes a good solid actor who can make the creatures and the characters, you know, living, breathing entities.
again, looking through your career, I mean, we've mentioned Porky. I mean, you also do the voice of Tweety Bird and occasionally some other Looney Tunes characters. I look through your anime roles, and we've already mentioned No Face. You've also worked on Ponyo on the Cliff and really big anime. You were Lupin for, I think, two of the animated movies?
For a handful. I did Cagliostro, and I did a couple of other films, and then we did a whole series that I don't know what happened to them, but we did them years ago for, I believe that was Streamline Pictures, I think. Mm-hmm.
How do you keep getting these big roles? Do you have something on certain casting directors? You just got some sort of blackmail material here?
It took me a very, very long time before I was able to get in with Disney Features. You know, it's a hard nut to crack, but once you crack that nut with any studio and you show that you're reliable and you're professional and you're a team player, then they kind of call you in. So, you know, the people responsible for casting a lot of the Disney Features, a lot of the Pixar Features, they'll just call me and say, we need you for 2 days next week, and I won't know what I'm doing off until I get there. And, you know, sometimes you're with a crew of actors and you're just playing. Everybody kind of gives their take on a character, and you don't know who they actually keep or what they use until you see the film. And when you work on a feature, it's a 1 to 5 year process, so you don't necessarily record it in order. I remember when I did The Emperor's New Groove, I just knew that I was going to be playing a squirrel. And when I got to the session, I had no idea what they wanted from me. And Mark Dindal, the director, was kind of explaining the character and how Patrick Warburton's character, Kronk, speaks squirrel, but the squirrel doesn't speak the same language he speaks. And so through trial and error, we just kind of created a language and a sound for this character.
Was something like that, was that done in a group or
no, I was solo. That was just me working with the director, and I did a day on the film, and they test screened it, and it seemed to be a popular character, so they brought me back, they wrote some more stuff, and it ended up being 2 features in 3 years on a series from a one-day shot on a film that was supposed to be just one joke comic relief. So, you know, you never know what comes from a day's work, what can happen in your career.
On the flip side of that, have you ever gone into a session and by the end of it, you know that this is going to be, you know, this is going to be a regular thing for you, like, and for some reason it just didn't take off the way you thought it would?
There have been times I've worked on films where I'm like, wow, this is like, I worked on Wreck-It Ralph that comes out in a month or so, and I left that session at Disney going, this is a winner. This is just such a well-written, clever, creative film. And I've walked out of sessions and I've gone, well, the next one will be better. And sometimes I'm right, sometimes I'm wrong. It's hard to tell because I don't get to see the whole script. I only get to see the parts that I'm working on that day.
I gotta talk about Akira. We actually had a listener question about Akira. You were several characters on the original English dub of Akira.
Yeah, that was the first anime job I ever did.
Was that different for you? I mean, you had been working for a while before that, though.
Mm-hmm.
Was that like a kind of a culture shock to be working with anime?
No, not at all. It's more difficult than doing Prelay because you have to match sync and you have to act and stay in character all at the same time. In fact, I would do a lot more anime if it paid better. It should pay triple what Prelay pays, but it doesn't. And I love the anime community. I love the actors. I love the producers. And it's probably the nicest fan base of anything I do. But no, it was just a job. It was just a job. And I remember that year Roger Ebert put it on his top 10 list of best pictures. So it surprised me because I didn't see the whole film. I only saw the portions I was working on. And to be quite honest, I didn't understand the story just from seeing the parts of the film I was voicing. So it's looking back now, it's just, you know, it's an honor to be a part of that film. And that was a Miyazaki film, and I've done a few. They've, you know, those have been really, really good to me.
To be fair, people that saw it from beginning to end, some of them didn't understand the story either. So I think you're excused.
Well, you know, I'm sometimes not the best gauge when it comes to that kind of filmmaking. You know, a lot of it is up to the interpretation of both the animators and the audience. But, you know, people said the same thing about 2001. What the heck does that mean? But, you know, that's what cinema is.
Now, with Akira, they did a new dub, I want to say about 10, 12 years ago.
Yeah.
Is that something that would bother you, that they went and redubbed it? I don't think, you weren't part of the redub, were you?
No, I wasn't. Does it bother me? No. I mean, would I have liked to have been asked to do it? Sure. Nobody did. So, no, it doesn't bother me. There's enough work for everybody. And, you know, I've talked to people who say, oh, we like your dub better. I've talked to people who said they like the newer dub better. And I've talked to a lot of people who say, we hate the dubbed. We want to see the original. So, you know, there's a fan base, and there's a taste for everything and every production.
Another listener question, they want to know about Robot Chicken. Now, you've done Porky Pig on there. You're also the voice of Luke Skywalker, a regular recurring character on Robot Chicken.
Yeah, and I've done a bunch. I did Roger Rabbit on one where I think O.J. Simpson was trying to get Roger to kill his wife or something. It was like, it's Robot Chicken, you know, you don't ask. You just go there, roll your eyes, and have fun. It's quite possibly some of the most enjoyable work I've done in my career. And that's due to Seth Green. He's a sensational voice director. He's a great actor too, but he's a sensational voice director.
Now, that was kind of the gist of the question, was that are those sessions, given the material and given who you're working with, are those like you almost get almost like a, I guess, a Willy Wonka kind of vibe to it, where it's like, if only we could see how they make it, it's probably just crazy stuff going on at all times. Is it?
Yeah, I mean, Seth took me on a tour of the studio once. I had a recording session. I think we were doing one of the Star Wars specials, and we went across the street, and he showed me how everything was done, and there's thousands of models, and it's just, you know what it looks like? It looks like a bunch of kids with their models just having a grand old time, and I think that's actually what it is. They just happen to be paid to make great television, but it's people with a passion who probably have been doing this since they were little kids with their you know, home video recorder, or some of the older people with an 8mm or super 8mm, and now they're doing it for a really sensational TV show. So it really is just nothing but a big fun fest.
Quickly moving away from voice acting, you do have one on camera credit, at least one. You were the host of a game show.
I was the host of the kids' version of Jeopardy.
Now, it's already been announced that the current host is going to be retiring. I believe so. I thought it
I don't
had.
Think so. I think that was a rumor. But
was that a rumor?
It's going to be around for a while.
Well, let's assume then, just for the sake of this question, he is retiring this year. Would you try to take over? Do you think you could do grown-up Jeopardy?
Oh, sure. You know, I mean, Could I? Hell yeah. Would the producers ask me to? I don't know. You know, my show was just so very different from Alex's show. They wanted me to really, you know, be high energy and you know, almost like a cheerleader to the kids, which I personally thought was just dumbing it up a little bit, or dumbing it down, I should say. I'd be more than happy to step into those. Those are tough shoes to step into. He and Tom Bergeron are the two best hosts, I think, on TV right now.
And one last specific role question. I consider myself a bit of a fairly knowledgeable about 80s, you know, television, but I've never heard of Jim Henson's Little Muppet Monsters.
Yeah, not many people did, because it was pulled after, I think, the third airing. When Muppet Babies popped up on Saturday morning, they extended it to a one-hour show called Little Muppet Monsters. And we did an animated version of Pigs in Space. I was Dr. Bunsen Honeydew. They just took all the characters from the Muppet Show and animated them. It was fun. It was the same writers. Hank Soroyan was the voice director. He also voice directed Muppet Babies. And it was a very expensive show because they used Jim and the actual Muppets and Muppeteers. They had live action stuff as well as animation, but didn't last. Didn't do well, but it was a lot of fun to work on.
Did you do any of the live action stuff?
No, on that.
Okay.
Not on that. But the live action, in the early 80s, I did a lot of sitcoms and a lot of soaps. live action.
Oh, okay.
You know, I did, I mean, but we're talking years and years ago, I did Facts of Life and Different Strokes and Give Me a Break and One Day at a Time. And so, but that was before my voiceover career really took off, and voiceover is what I really wanted.
Well, where I was going with that is you also worked Fraggle Rock.
I did the cartoon Fraggle Rock.
You did? Oh, that was the animated Fraggle Rock. Okay.
It was the animated version, yeah.
Oh, okay. Because I was going to ask about doing, if you were doing the voices live with the puppeteer, but that obviously does not apply.
No, no. This was about the time the Fraggle Rock went off HBO. NBC did an animated version. And
Yes.
And that was quite possibly one of the most enjoyable jobs I ever had because of the creatives, the writers and the producers, John Semper and Cynthia Freedlob, and the actors who I met on that show, Townsend Coleman, Rob Paulson, Mona Marshall, Barbara Goodson. I mean, those, they became lifelong friends. In fact, last year about this time, we had a 25th anniversary reunion dinner for the cartoon Fraggle Rock. And that was a blast. But, you know, time goes fast.
It does. In that time, I mean, you mentioned now you've been doing it, doing voice acting for almost 30 years now. How has the industry changed? I mean, you came up in the kind of, for a lot of people, the heyday of television animated voice acting.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it was, I mean, when I started out in the business, Mel Blanc, Dawes Butler, June Foray, Don Messick, the classic, you know, Paul Frees, they were all still around. How has it changed? Well, the internet, voiceover in general, the internet has made it available to anybody with a $99 snowball microphone and GarageBand. You know, anybody can compete for commercials. Animation, you kind of sort of still have to live here in LA. I will say that, you know, when I started out in the business, there was no Disney Channel, there was no Cartoon Network. There was no Nickelodeon, and the only studio doing animated features was Disney, and they were doing one every 5 to 7 years. Today, there's more work for people interested in pursuing animation than ever before, because every major motion picture studio has an animation department, and there are 24-hour cartoon networks. They're straight to DVD. So there's more work today, but there's also more competition. So, you know, it balances. I'm happy I got into the business when I did, but for anybody who's interested in getting into the business, they hold auditions every day because they're always looking for somebody new and brilliant.
Do you think, I mean, granted, it might not be terribly fair when you're comparing it against working with, like, Dawes Butler and Mel Blanc and all that. What do you think of the kind of the current crop of the regular working people? And you feel free to punt this question if you don't want to upset anyone. But do you think, I mean, I've heard from other people that they feel that the current working people are some of the best voice actors, at least as far as television and animation go, since, you know, that 80s, the early 80s crop?
I think that there's a stable of us today that are as good or better than anybody ever. I mean, you know, of course, Mel and Dawes and June Foray, these are geniuses. But the styles of animation are so different today. And there's a lot more realistic acting, especially in games. It's just there's a caliber of talent right now. You know, I could do a laundry list. You know, from Jim Cummings to Dee Bradley Baker and Jennifer Hale. You know, Townsend, Rob Paulson, Maurice LaMarche. I mean, these are brilliant actors. They're not brilliant cartoon actors. They're brilliant actors.
Speaking of games, that is kind of the one area, at least on this list that I'm looking at, that seems to be a little lacking. Are you doing video games, and is that something you're interested in doing?
On occasion, I do them. You know, I've been doing Luke Skywalker for the Star Wars games for about 15, 16 years, I guess, maybe longer. I don't do a lot of games, and the reason is because they're throat killers. And if I see a gun or a fatigue in a picture for an audition, I'm going to pass on it. Games don't pay residuals. So you get session fee. Yeah, you get a session fee and that's it. So I don't want to risk losing my voice and not be available to even audition later on in the day for a commercial, because it's just not worth it to me. I mean, I just worked on a game called Skylander that was just more fun and just a really nice group. great producers, terrific director. So I do games, but I don't do them on a regular basis. It's just, it's not worth it to me to hurt my voice.
All right. We ask this of a lot of people that have been in the business for a while. For someone that is getting into the business now, is there any piece of advice that you would give them?
Yeah, study acting. Become the best actor you possibly can. Study acting, study improv. Go to a great college if you're young that has a good theater department. Then study voiceover. The people that do it the other way around, they take the voiceover classes without any acting foundation. They have no idea what to do with those words or how to take direction. I also recommend that people study marketing and promoting. You know, you've got to be your own promoter. If animation is something that you're really interested in, you do have to get to Los Angeles, and this is the hub. Anime they do. I mean, you know, Texas, there's a lot of anime dubbing for some bizarre reason. I don't know why, but it landed there. I just think that whatever it is in this business that you really want to do, if you want it bad enough, you're going to do it. If the obstacles scare you, the competition, the odds, then don't do it. But if the statistics make you go, wow, I want this even more, it lights a fire in your belly, then you're right for pursuing show business. But it's not easy. You know, if you go to my website, when I was 14, I called Mel Blanc at home, and I recorded the conversation, and I posted it on my website. One of the questions, he said, how old are you? I said, 14. He goes, well, it takes an awful long time. It's an awful hard business. He was right, but I didn't care. I didn't care how hard it was. I didn't care who else was out there. So you got to want it worse than anybody else. You got to work harder than anybody else. And you've got to be a nice person. You know, everybody's replaceable. Just be there early, stay late, and be a really nice person to work with.
Excellent. You did mention the website, which you can find at www.bobbergen.com. You're also on Twitter at just Bob Bergen as well.
I am, and I've got a Facebook page, and I teach animation voiceover. If anybody's interested in that, there's a page called All Things Bob Bergen on Facebook. You can just join that, and you'll know where I'm going to be around the country.
And are you doing any conventions or anything like that? Is there anywhere that someone could see you?
Not right now, but I'll give you kind of a. Actually, this is. It's only in the talking stages, but it's quite possible that next year, if things go well, I'm hoping to put together a 4-day voiceover fan convention on a cruise ship.
Oh wow!
A 4-day cruise out of Los Angeles, where. You know, if everything works out, I'll just gather some of the best in voiceover, voice actors, maybe some agents, maybe some casting directors if they're available, if they can get away. And it'll be a chance, think Comic-Con, but just for animation voice actors, where people can meet their favorite voice actors, and we'll do panels and Q&As, and we'll probably do a live reading of some of their favorite cartoons, and just a chance to rub elbows and meet and greet, and also, you know, have a nice cocktail with an umbrella.
I can't think of any better thing to do.
Well, I actually, it's so funny because I've been in the thinking, talking stages, and this is the first I've actually mentioned it publicly. So,
oh, wow.
Hey,
well,
there you go.
I'm honored.
If it happens, it'll be probably next November, a year from now.
Okay. Good to know. Definitely let us know as details get firmed up.
Well, that'll absolutely be on my Facebook page. So
very good.
People just keep your eye open for that.
All right. I know you got a session to get to, so I'm not going to take up any more of your time. Again, the website is bobbergen.com, and just do a search for Bob Bergen. He's kind of all over the place on the internet. He's not hard to find. So, Bob, thank you so much for coming on.
You betcha.
And we'll definitely let us know about this cruise.
Absolutely.
This has been The Voice Behind, a production of the Fancy Pants Gangsters Netcast Network. Tune in every Wednesday for a new episode, and for outtakes from this and other episodes, as well as news and commentary from the voice actor community, follow our Twitter feed at twitter.com/thevoicebehind or on Facebook at facebook.com/thevoicebehind. Comments, questions, and suggestions are more than welcome at voice@fancypantsgangsters.com. Thanks so much for listening.